Thanks so much for joining us here today on WPR News. Larry Mueller here. We're starting the show today by talking with you about aquaponics. It's a way to dramatically increase crop production with a fraction of the water you need for traditional farming. You don't need chemical fertilizers or pesticides, but you do need live fish and live plants to make it work. And we have a working aquaponic system in a greenhouse on the UW-Madison campus. And we'll talk about aquaponics in general and about that greenhouse with our guest, Johanna Oosterwijk. Johanna is manager of the D.C. Smith Greenhouse in the UW-Madison Department of Plant and Agroecosystem Sciences. She's been at the greenhouse for a long time now, 18 years, my goodness. And it's hard to believe it's been that long. But you can join in with your questions as we move along today, as we talk about aquaponics. Hope you'll join in. Give a call at 800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or email to talk@WPR.org. That's talk@WPR.org. Johanna Oosterwijk, welcome. Good to have you back.
Good to be here, Larry. It's always a pleasure to join you on your show.
Let's talk, aquaponics has been around a long time, hasn't it?
It really has. I mean, the modern way that we think about it combined with controlled environment agriculture is probably 20 to 30 years old, but you can certainly find examples of folks growing crops fertilized by fish, you know, way back as long as we've been doing agriculture, especially when you think about wet agriculture, like, say, rice paddies.
Yeah, yeah. China was big on it millennia back, and I know that even the Aztecs, I read somewhere, had an aquaponic system. So it's amazing system and pretty gaining in popularity, is it not?
It certainly is. So as folks are looking for alternative ways to grow crops, systems that can be close to consumers. So it's an option for urban agricultural systems. It doesn't take up a lot of space, a lot of land. So when there's not a lot of room to grow a large field of something, we can turn to aquaponics and other controlled environment systems to make better use of the space and actually grow more in a smaller space than we could if we laid everything outside in a field.
Yeah, right about that. Well, you're the manager of the D.C. Smith Greenhouse on the UW-Madison campus. It's a cool spot on campus. tell us about the greenhouse.
Well, thanks. I love the greenhouse. I've been here almost 20 years, as you said. And it is the teaching greenhouse for the College of Agriculture. So if you come to campus, there are actually a lot of greenhouses. This one focuses on instruction primarily for undergraduates, though we do see some graduate work as well. And that's what our aquaponics system is for. It's integrated into the teaching that instructors in the College of Agriculture do, one of which I am. I teach classes in greenhouse cultivation. So we use the aquaponics system there. We also host classes for other classes in the Department of Plant and Agroecosystem Sciences, but the greenhouse is for the entire college. So we have classes for the plant pathology department and for entomology, for forest products.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah. And we also welcome the public. So we have some outreach events. We offer tours for community groups, school kids. And I will say we're going to have a public event on May 3rd when, if folks are interested, they can come and check out our aquaponics system. So that's a Saturday. We're not usually open on Saturdays.
Yeah.
But that event will be 10 to 1 Saturday, May 3rd. You can stop by the campus and see the greenhouses, but also the Allen Gardens and the Energy Institute and Library will be open as well.
Yeah, that should be a cool day for sure. Well, let's talk about the aquaponics system. What's the size and scale of the one you have at the greenhouse?
We have a very modest scale system. It's still large for us. It fills up half of a greenhouse. The footprint is 200 square feet, which is a lot for our small rooms. It's half the growing space that we have there. You can have a very small tabletop system all the way up to a, you know, full-size multi-greenhouse system. You see them at all different scales. This system works well for our classes. It's you know, not a huge commitment in space, though it does take up half of one of our rooms, as I said. And we can grow, 20 to 40 fish in a 100-gallon tank, along with two tanks of hydroponically grown vegetables. And each of those tanks is about, 24 square feet each. So we have about 50 square feet of growing space plus a 100-gallon tank for the fish.
How do the fish and talk about how the fish and the plants support each other?
So the synergy of aquaponics is that you're getting extra work out of a system. So where you have a single system with hydroponics, you would be growing plants in water culture and adding probably a synthetic fertilizer, but you'd have fertilizer as an input. In aquaculture, where you're growing fish farming, you have your tanks of fish, but you also need to have some filtration system to get rid of the fish waste. The really great thing about aquaponics is that you blend these two together and you get some savings. You get the cost savings of fertilizer because the fish waste becomes the fertilizer for the plants, so you're using that waste product, and the plants become the filtration system for the fish. So it's less expensive than growing an individual aquaculture system and an individual hydroponics system. You bring them together and you have that synergy where they work together using the fertilizer for the fish and the fish as the filtration system for the plants.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. Fish and plants are grown there through aquaponics?
Well, we chose the easy beginner level. I have lots of experience in greenhouses, but I don't even have a fish tank at home. So I came to this from the hydroponics, growing plants in controlled environments aspect. So I wanted the easy care version of fish, and we chose tilapia. There's a reason they are the most common fish in aquaponic systems. They're a popular food fish, and they're quite tolerant of a wide range of conditions. So as we, as growers and fish caretakers, were learning about this new, you know, livestock, I guess you could call it a school, we wanted to make sure that we, kept things right for them. But the tilapia can tolerate a wide range of water temperatures, water quality. So that made it a little bit easier for us rather than trying to have to target specific requirements for a harder to raise crop of fish like perch or, trout.
Or walleye.
Or walleye, yeah. So we chose the easiest fish, though. Some folks also suggested goldfish, because then you also have that decorative aspect, and some folks would do an aquaponic system where instead of a food fish, you could grow an ornamental fish and, you know, possibly sell those off to pet stores as a source of income as well.
With the teaching aspect of it, are you trying to just raise awareness among the students? Certainly you're teaching them the whole operation, but what's the hope there?
The hope is to be able to teach some sustainability values. They've been used not just by the, you know, greenhouse growing classes, but they've also been an example for engineering classes. We have a professor on campus who looks at life cycle analysis. So she's an engineering professor, Andrea Hicks, who actually helped us get started and looks at inputs, outputs, and efficiency of systems. So that's another aspect of how they can be used for teaching. For my classes, I certainly want to teach about the cultivation aspects, keeping the fish healthy, keeping the plants healthy. Primarily, that's been blended into our water quality classes, because water quality is not only important for the health of the fish, it's also important for the health of the plants, and their requirements aren't always exactly the same. I mentioned temperature. The tilapia can accept a wide range of temperatures, though generally they like warmer temperatures. So I've been trying to grow crops that like a little bit warmer temperatures too.
Yeah,
and
I was going to ask.
In the greenhouse, it gets warmer.
Yeah, it gets warmer there for sure. And the plants, so what are you growing?
So the plants that we are growing, we've tried a couple different things. Currently, I have a crop of basil growing alongside of the fish tank, and they are doing really well. I tried lettuce last year, and I probably should have known lettuce like it cool. And in the greenhouse in the summer, it gets warm and the fish like it warm. So that was a poor choice on my part. But we had a lot of lettuce, and I also grow lettuce hydroponically. So I had a lot of experience with that, and I kind of wanted to compare the two systems. But one thing to think about if you're, you know, saying, well, I'd like to try aquaponics, is matching the requirements of your fish to your plant crop.
Yeah.
So if you have a warm temperature fish, look for a warm season crop. If you have a cool temperature fish like perch or trout, yeah, go for lettuce or something, but also realize you'll need to keep your environment cooler. So that might be an extra investment in some cooling systems during the summer at least.
Hmm. Helen in West Salem has something for us. Let's go there. Hi, Helen.
Hi. I just want to tell you that for several years, West Salem High School has this system. And the tilapia is served at a community dinner to over 250 people once a year. And so that's just kind of an exciting thing. And they are going to be enlarging it besides. So that's my comment.
Oh, thank you. So that's at West Salem High School. Were you familiar with that, Johanna?
I'm not familiar with the West Salem system, but I know a lot of schools do incorporate these systems. Again, just they're a great way to teach a whole lot of things, economics, plant care, animal care, and the efficiency of sustainable systems as well. So they're a great option for schools.
And they feed over 200 people, Helen. That's great. a nice dinner. Helen from West Salem, thank you so much. You can join in, too. The number to call, maybe you've got a story relating to aquaponics or just a question. Number is 800-642-1234. Or you could email us the email address, talk@WPR.org. Our guest today, Johanna Oosterwyk, who's manager of the D.C. Smith Greenhouse. I'm Larry Mueller for WPR News. Coming up at noon today, we'll talk about spring paddling with Rutabaga Paddle Sports owner Darren Bush and Wisconsin paddling guidebook author Timothy Bauer. That's at noon here on the Larry Mueller Show. Right now, we're taking a look at aquaponics. And again, if you'd like to join in, the number to call, I hope you will, 800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234. Or you could email us the email address, talk@WPR.org. Connor emailed to ask if it's feasible to maintain an aquaponic system in an unfinished basement. He's wondering about humidity concerns, maybe are there odor control concerns or other issues with trying to do it in a residential space?
I think it is entirely possible, and I know folks who have set up both hydroponic and aquaponic systems in basements. The primary issue for the plants is going to be you'll need to spend some money on light. And depending on your choice of fish, you may also need to do some temperature control. There may be some dehumidification that needs to take place as well. You're right about that. So there's going to be some environmental monitoring that needs to take place. But you know, assuming you had the water and electricity and appropriate systems to manage the environment, it definitely can be done. There are some interesting sort of systems that are available. You can find blueprints online. A lot of folks are willing to share their information. And I think my best advice for anyone interested in sort of making a home aquaponic system would be to, you know, seek out mentors, find a network in your area. You can do that through social media. There's also a National Aquaponics Association. And most of those folks are glad to share their experiences, help you avoid some pitfalls. And, you know, learn from their mistakes and help you out saying, you know, this system kind of worked better for me. And here's where you can source the materials. Here's where you can get your fish food. And here's how you can maintain healthy plants and healthy fish at the same time.
Yeah. Eli in Iron Mountain, Michigan has something that relates to the healthiness side of things, I think. Eli, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hey, Larry. Hey, doctor. Thanks for having me, guys. Yes, so I'm just wondering how dire would it be if a tilapia were to die in the system? How quick would that removal need to be? What would the effects be on the plant? And also, is there any kind of mating system to keep the tilapia in perpetuity?
Oh, those are some good questions. So I'll take the first one about fish health first. So you certainly want to be monitoring your system at least daily. We do daily health checks when we feed the fish. We do have an automatic feeder as well, so they get fed morning and evening. But I would say that you certainly want to be aware of the health of your fish and, you know, not let anything linger in that system for more than a day. So if you're going away on vacation, find a pet sitter for the fish. So in that case, the plants won't necessarily be harmed by a dead fish floating in the system. I would be more worried about whatever killed that fish. Would that also be infecting the rest of your fish school? And you might, you know, need some help to determine whether that was, you know, the fish picking on each other, which does sometimes happen, or whether there was a mechanical fault or something else. Why did you have that fish death? So you certainly want to be doing health checks at least daily. And in the greenhouse, we absolutely do that. I mean, we were already used to coming in on the weekends to water the plants. So it wasn't a lot to ask the staff to do the additional training, take care of the fish, and also, you know, check their health, do those water quality checks that we do every day, and make sure that things were going well. So adding the fish is, you know, it is an extra level of care and consideration. So don't neglect that.
What about, you know, I also asked about mating programs. Can you get that going too?
you actually can. It depends on your species of fish, what kind of environment they're going to need for reproduction. So it depends on this fish. The ones that I've worked with the most, those tilapia, they like something on the bottom of the tank to lay their eggs in. So by keeping the bottom of the tank clean, we actually prevent them from laying eggs and those eggs from hatching. That's better for us because with my system, I kind of want to go with the school year. So we take the summer off. We harvest the fish at the end of the spring semester and we start a new school from fry that we buy in the fall. But certainly a grower can set up their own breeding program where you could collect small fry. You could allow for tilapia that some sort of sediment or like a pebbles on the bottom, let them lay their eggs and collect those fry and then hatch them out. The very young fish would do better in a separate tank system though, because otherwise they may occasionally go through the plumbing. So we have screens to keep small fish from going into the plant system. So the plant tanks are separate from the fish tanks, and there's some good reasons to keep them that way. But it's certainly doable to, just like you would in an aquaculture system, have a reproductive strategy so that you're not constantly buying new schools of fish from a supplier.
Yeah. Eli, thanks much for calling. Appreciate it. You can join in, too. The number is 800-642-1234 or email to talk@WPR.org. Kathy in Harshaw called, couldn't stay with us, but wants to know if freshwater shrimp instead of fish could work in a Wisconsin-based aquaponics system.
The short answer is yes, they could. There are aquaponic systems using a wide range of aquatic animals. So we see everything from shrimp to fish to mollusks, clams and other bivalves being used as the nutrient source for growing crops of plants.
Very cool. UW-Stevens Point supports the Northern Aquaculture Demonstration Facility in Bayfield. I'm how are facilities like that one and yours encouraging the adoption of aquaculture in Wisconsin and perhaps beyond?
Sure. The Stevens Point aquaculture program is much older and, you know, larger than our simple aquaponics system in the greenhouse that we have here. So Stevens Point offers a full aquaculture program for their students. You can get a minor in that. They also offer at least one class in aquaponics, but their focus is on fish farming primarily. So though they have also looked at aquaponics, but they come to it from the fish farming aspect, where I came to aquaponics from the plant side. So depending on which side of that you're more interested in, you know, I know more about the plants, they know more about the fish, and have a really well-developed program, including that aquaculture center. I think it's in Bayfield.
Yeah.
Where, you know, students get that hands-on experience that is so essential to good education, and which is why places like the greenhouse I manage exist.
I know they are happen to be doing some research on walleye. And of course, walleye are the most popular fish in Wisconsin. If you could figure out a way to grow them aquaponically, it would be wonderful. I think the problem that they have, well, like anybody has who's working with it, is that walleye require a period of cold water temperatures during winter for gonad development. And we don't know yet what temperature, exact temperature, or what duration of that temperature they need to have in order to. But it would be really nice if we could raise walleye aquaponically. I think, anyway, it'd be sure worth the try. And so I hope they have some success down the road with that. Vern in Boyd, Wisconsin, your turn. Hi, Vern.
Oh, good morning. Thanks for letting me on. I say in Milwaukee, back in the 50s, you used to have greenhouses down there. They used to waste steam that from the power plants. But up here in Stanton, they got corn to alcohol, and it generates huge amounts of CO2, 250 tons a day, plus steam. You got everything you need to make a couple acres, maybe even 3 acres of greenhouses. And it's at scale.
Vern, thanks for calling. Comment, Johanna?
Yeah, using waste sources of heat is a great way to reduce the cost of your greenhouse facility. And then if you have an aquaponic system in the greenhouse, then that's a further cost reduction. Yeah, there are certainly examples, even in Wisconsin, where we use waste heat. There's a cogeneration plant for the University of Wisconsin-Whitewater and a greenhouse attached to that using the excess heat that goes along with that power and hot water generation plant. So if you can find a waste product, that's sort of the... That's a key tenet of aquaponics, is using a waste product as an input in a different system. So yeah, if there was a way to heat a greenhouse with steam off of corn silage, that'd be interesting. I might, you know, follow up with some of the other plant science or PAS faculty, since we have a lot of research going on into corn and other grains here in the department.
Yeah, very cool. Thanks again for that comment. Jeff emailed to say that wild salmon have pink flesh naturally, but most farm salmon have coloring added to their food to give that color. What's the difference, or what's missing? What's used, and maybe what's used to create that color, if you're familiar?
Oh, no, that's a question about the fish, which is less up my alley, but... yeah, I have heard that, and they basically add food sources that have that right coloring. I think it comes down to the same thing that happens with flamingos in zoos. They have to feed them the right food sources. Flamingos would naturally feed on shrimp, and then they pick up that pink coloration in their feathers. Same thing with salmon. It comes down to what are you feeding them, and does that have the raw materials that they need to build up those pink colors?
Yeah.
But I don't know what exactly the feed is that salmon need.
Let's talk about ammonia for a minute. A byproduct of fish waste is ammonia, which high concentrations, of course, can be toxic to fish. How's the ammonia converted into a form of nitrogen that benefits the fish?
Oh, that's a great question.
Or benefits the plants.
It is essential to what makes aquaponics work. So if you have a fish farm, your primary waste is that ammonia, which is nitrogen and hydrogen. It's just a molecule that is it's in our own waste too, as well as in fish waste. Plants need nitrogen. It's the mineral that they use the most of. So it's a great way to take that waste product from the fish and have the plants use it. However, plants don't really love ammonia. They want the nitrogen, but that ammonia plus hydrogen molecule is tough for them to absorb. So you can't see them, but there is a third set of organisms in an aquaponic system. We see the fish, we see the plants, but in between them, there's another essential organism. There's a set of bacteria that are converting the ammonia nitrogen into nitrite and then nitrate nitrogen. So there's some reactions going on at the molecular level, and they're basically shepherded along by these bacteria. So you have the bacteria in the system that remove the hydrogens from the ammonia molecule and slap on some oxygens, and that makes it into nitrite, which is nitrogen and two oxygens. Plants really love nitrate, though, which is nitrogen and three oxygens. So there's another bacteria in the system that adds another oxygen to it, and then it's in a form that is not toxic to fish, which the ammonia is, but the plants love to take up. So if you just stick the plants and the fish together, it's not going to work really well. You're still going to get overwhelming amounts of ammonia in the system because the plants really don't love ammonia. But with the bacteria there in the middle, they convert the ammonia into that nitrate, which is actually the primary form of nitrogen in most fertilizers. If you buy lawn fertilizer and you look at the guaranteed analysis, it's going to say nitrate nitrogen. And that's what the plants want. So the plants are obvious, the fish are obvious, but in the middle, there's this invisible microorganism.
Now, do you have to go out
doing the transformation?
Do you have to go out and buy these bacteria, or do they appear naturally or normally?
They are naturally occurring all over in the environment. You can certainly buy inoculants that will jumpstart your system, or you can wait for them to build up. These bacteria are not harmful to humans, but they are all around in our environment doing that chemical reaction, breaking down ammonia into nitrite and nitrate. In an aquaponic system, we actually create an environment that's hospitable to them, so to encourage them to thrive and to grow on this abundant ammonia source. So one issue with aquaponic systems can be that when you first start them up, you get these ammonia spikes, because your bacteria numbers aren't high enough, and that takes time. You can certainly purchase an inoculant to help jumpstart that, or you can give them the time and wait to allow them to naturally develop and build up. But early on in an aquaponic systems, I mentioned water testing. That water testing is essential. We test for ammonia, we test for nitrate and nitrite levels so that we can watch as the bacteria jump in and start doing their job. In a well-developed system, you'll see almost no ammonia in the water. Very early on, you'll see a lot of ammonia in the water because you don't have enough bacteria to deal with the fish waste. So in a thriving aquaponic system, even though you have a huge number of fish, you'll see very little ammonia because you have those bacteria that are converting it into the nitrate that the plants will absorb.
I was thinking about the water use in this. Aquaponic systems use, definitely a fraction of the water that is needed on a farm field.
Yes, they do.
And aquaponic systems are far more productive.
Yeah, so it's a combination between aquaponics is also leaning into the productivity that you get from hydroponics and that you get from controlled environment agriculture. So out in a farm field, you've got, you're growing your plants and you're maybe you're irrigating. If you are, a lot of that water is going to run off, some of it will evaporate, and some of it may leach down through the soil. So you lose that water in a variety of ways, in addition to what the plants themselves are actually using. In a hydroponic system, the system itself might hold a lot of water, but most of the water that leaves that system only leaves through the plants. So we see the transpiration loss, but we're not seeing the loss from runoff or leaching or evaporation into the atmosphere. And that reduces the water use by hydroponic and aquaponic systems down to, you know, less than 10% if you were growing in an equivalent crop, say of lettuce or tomatoes, in an open field.
I'm wondering about the potential here in terms of large-scale commercial aquaponics. I mean, what's the potential for that?
The potential we're seeing now is quite good. A lot of folks are interested in fresh, locally grown produce and fresh, locally grown fish as well. You were mentioning walleye. Sounds like you're already, you've got your fork and knife and plate for that fish fry. So there's a lot of potential. However, there are some pitfalls. It's difficult to get to a scale where you can compete with, you know, the outdoor production facilities. An aquaponic system is still a huge investment. Now, an aquaponic system can produce an equivalent amount of fish and an equivalent amount of crops for, you know, less than two separate systems would, but you have a whole lot of infrastructure when you're getting started and a lot of costs and inputs in addition to the money you're saving on fertilization and filtration for the water quality. So there are opportunities, but there's a big jump between, say, a small system in your home or school and a full-size commercial system where you can maybe compete with grocery stores since, you know, for most foods, margins are very low. So finding that is tricky and can take a lot of investment.
Yeah, that's why walleye would be good, because I think walleye is kind of a high-value product.
Yeah, that's part of the trick, is finding a high-value product or a niche market where you can compete. So maybe selling at farmers markets to customers who will pay you that premium for fresh local produce or fish fillets. So it's still going to be more expensive than either wild-caught salmon or outdoor cultivated aquaculture salmon or other fish. You're going to have more inputs in an aquaponic system, so you also need to find a market that will pay you that premium price.
Well, at the home gardener level, let's take it there. How much technical knowledge or know-how do you need to set up an aquaponic system?
You can do it with some very simple systems and materials. Like I said, I would, if I was starting, and when I did start, I reached out to people who already had systems, who knew what they were doing. So finding a network of folks to give you advice is really, in my mind, essential and helps, you know, prevent some of the easy errors. But it's certainly within the grasp of anyone who, you know, is interested as a gardener or as an aquarium enthusiast. So neither of these things is unattainable. But it is a new set of skills, and it's always beneficial to get advice and find good resources.
As I understand it, there are three main aquaponic systems. There's this medium-based, I think it's called, there's a nutrient film and raft system. And how do you choose the right system for you?
Oh, that's a good question. So yes, so there are three basic systems that we see in most aquaponic systems. And if I were choosing one, I would think about, you know, what sort of systems and environment do I already have? For a homeowner, I would probably recommend starting with a medium-based system. So by medium, we're talking about a media or a support system for the plants themselves. the fish tanks pretty much stay the same in all three of these systems, but what you're talking about is how are you growing the plants. The medium-based system is a little more forgiving, and that makes it a good option for homeowners. You can also have a smaller planting bed area for your plants and get good good nutrition. The raft system is what I'm currently using at the DC Smith Greenhouse. So we have, the plants are growing in basically, you know, foam board insulation rafts that float on the surface of the water. That's why we call it a raft system or a deep water system, because the water depth is deeper than it is in the other systems. I'm growing that way, but I want to convert maybe after this summer, after the current school is done and I'm setting up the new school year. I'm going to try a medium system next fall. So instead of having deep water with rafts floating on the top, I'm going to fill our water tanks, which are, they're about a foot deep, with a type of medium called expanded clay. So it's these clay pellets, and you can buy them under a number of different brand names. But that's a media. So the plant roots, instead of floating on the water, grow in that, and that media holds the nutrition. So I'm going to try a media system, and that's probably the one that I think is most attainable for homeowners. After that, a raft system is fairly simple. The NFT system, which is nutrient film technique, is probably, you know, a higher technical level. It has a very thin film of water. You're constantly having the water flow, and there's not much of a buffer. So if your pump breaks down, your plant roots get dry really fast. So the buffering in that system isn't as good, say, as in the raft, where they still have water even if your electricity goes out, or in the media system where, again, you still have water. The nutrient film technique is more reliant on a constant supply of power to move the water around.
So under that media system, basically, how big a tank would you need and how much media, you know, to actually grow the plants and enough for your home use?
Certainly. So for a home system, I'm glad you specified that, because it's really going to depend on what you're doing. For a home system, you know, you could get away with, say, a 40 or 60 gallon fish tank, and that would supply, say, a, you know, 2 foot by 4 foot or a 2 foot by 6 foot system with plants in it that would provide the nitrogen that that many plants would need. It's going to depend a little bit on what kind of plants you are growing. Leafy greens like basil that I'm growing or lettuces are going to grow faster and need fewer nutrients than, say, a fruiting vegetable like a tomato or a cucumber. In general, I recommend leafy green crops because the turnover is faster. So the crop only takes, say, you know, 4 to 6 weeks to grow, and then you're ready to harvest, rather than tomatoes where you plant them and then you don't get your first harvest for 2 months. You know, for all the people who are chomping at the bit to get their tomato plants in the ground, wait a little while longer. We might still get frost here in southern Wisconsin, and certainly in northern Wisconsin we'll see it. So wait. And yeah, again, you won't get your first tomatoes till the end of July.
But you can get some lettuce pretty quick. Under this system. Johanna Oosterwijk, our guest today, instructional manager of the D.C. Smith Greenhouse on the UW-Madison Department of Plant and Agro-Ecosystem Sciences. Great to have her with us as we talk aquaponics. And again, I'll invite you to join in. The number to call, 800-642-1234, or you could email us, the email address, talk@WPR.org. I'm Larry Mueller for WPR News. Thanks for joining in today on WPR News. Larry Mueller here. Looking ahead to tomorrow on the show, writer and music enthusiast Tom Wilmoth is back to share his spring playlist, so we'll be playing lots of music in that first hour of the show. We'll get a preview of Cheech's Dees Fest later on from performer Greg Hall, and then we talk with members of the La Crosse-based band Toaster Ghost. That's tomorrow on the Larry Mueller Show. Right now, though, we're talking aquaponics with Johanna Oosterwijk. instructional manager at the D.C. Smith Greenhouse on the UW-Madison campus. Great to have her back as we talk with her about aquaponics. Questions and experience to share? I hope you'll join in at 800-642-1234, or you could email us the email address talk@WPR.org. Let's talk a little bit more about, what pest infestations, I guess we could call it. Are the plant and fish vulnerable to pest infestations?
Well, the short answer is yes, just like any other farming or gardening system. We've got some things that make it easier in a greenhouse system. So we put vents on the windows, screens on the vents, just like you put mosquito netting on your windows at home. So we're able to keep out a lot of the pests, but we do still have issues with things like aphids, thrips, spider mites, and whiteflies. Most of our efforts are put into preventing those from getting into the system, though. Because especially since we are now including a food animal in the system, we're even more limited on what kinds of controls we are able or willing to use in this system. So rather than using chemical pesticides, I am emphasizing the use of biological controls in this system, because we've got the plants that are a food, and we also have the fish, which are another organism and are often susceptible to those chemical pesticides that we might want to spray on things like aphids. They might also harm our fish. So in an aquaponic system, we do most of our work beforehand by trying to prevent pests from getting into the system. Having a controlled environment with screens on the vents helps with that. And then when we do run into a pest outbreak, we're going to emphasize biological controls like parasitic wasps to control aphids, or fungal pathogens that will kill thrips or spider mites. For spider mites, we also have predatory mites that can be used to control those. So we try to avoid the use of pesticides in aquaponic systems, because we're doing food crops, and those folks who are willing to give you a premium for your fresh local produce are probably also very interested in what inputs you use. So reducing being able to say we are, you know, chemical pesticide free, we are using a natural fertilizer instead of a synthetic fertilizer, helps to get people be willing to, you know, give us the return on that if, you know, we're growing as a commercial concern.
And on the fish side, I imagine there are some things that could attack fish as well.
There are also some diseases that we have to be concerned of and look for. The same things that would attack your fish in an aquarium or fish tank. So we can hopefully prevent those by, again, paying attention to water quality, making sure that you have the temperature and the pH level that is healthy for your fish, and also being careful about the source of the fish that we buy in. So when I buy new fish, I get them from a fish producer who does tests, checks, make sure that I'm not bringing in any diseases with the fish that I have. Harvesting fish from the wild would be really, it would be dangerous in the way that bringing a plant in from outside, you could be bringing in pests or diseases that you then have to deal with. There's also the issue with food safety. So a wet environment is a great place for, well, bacteria that we want, those bacteria mm-hmm. that convert ammonia into nitrate, we want to have those around. But there are a lot of other bacteria that can cause food safety issues. So keeping things clean, doing tests to make sure that you don't have those bad bacteria, using a safe water source. So if you have a well, making sure that it gets tested, you're going to test it before you want to drink that water yourself. And you want to test that water to make sure that there are no contaminants or pathogens for your fish and for your plants. If you have a surface water source, or if you're collecting rainwater, you want to test and care for that to make sure that your fish, your plants are healthy, and that anyone eating your crop or your produce are also going to stay safe and healthy.
Yeah, for sure. Well, a lot of people have been wondering about the upfront costs for a system and at the sort of the home gardener level, let's put it.
Yeah, so the home gardener level, you can certainly, you know, purchase a system or a kit to put together, and you can find those for a few thousand dollars. There are online DIY systems that you can put together for certainly under $1,000. A system like the one that we have in the DC Smith Greenhouse, it's a larger system, and it was purchased by a company that makes those kits for, you know, mid-size groups. They're for schools, and they sell them for several thousand dollars. You can get more bells and whistles and spend more money. But it's certainly a DIY project that you could do for less than $1,000 at home. There's a bunch of different pieces. You've got the fish tank, the pumps to move the water around. You want a plant tank. And then you also need a buffer in between there. You'll want another tank sort of for the bacteria and for what we call degassing to allow the excess products as the bacteria turn the ammonia into nitrate to gas off and get out of the system. So there are a couple of pieces that you need. It's not, you know, not free unless you're really good at upcycling stuff.
Dana in Green Bay wonders if you can transplant plants started in an aquaponic system. Could you transplant those plants to soil? Dana said they started peppers in a small countertop aquaponic system, but is looking to get them to grow bigger.
Again, short answer, yes, you could. It would depend. They'll need a little bit of extra care. So plants that are growing, say, in a deep water culture system where they're growing with their roots trailing in the water, those water roots have a different morphology to them than roots that plants grow in soil. So they're more delicate and fragile. So you will, I wouldn't put them directly outside in the heat of the sun, for example. I would plant them into, say, a pot where you can monitor the water and make sure that you're caring for them. They don't get too hot, too exposed to wind. So they'll kind of need a hardening period is what we call that. Just like the plants that you buy in the greenhouse might struggle when you take them outside, you do want to do kind of a buffer and let them toughen up before you put them out into the harsh world in full sun and windy situations. So the roots are going to need to toughen up just like the leaves and the stems of the plant would as well. If you are currently like growing it in some sort of a media or a potting mix, that's going to be an easier transition than if they are growing completely in water, like with a deep water culture system. A plant that had been grown in a media system would be easier to transplant and more agreeable to that stress.
And somebody has mentioned you can use mason jars for a countertop aquaponic system as well. So you could probably get down pretty inexpensively.
Potentially, yeah. So I would be concerned, you could certainly do hydroponics that way. I would be concerned about the fish and the fish getting enough oxygen.
Yeah.
So I mentioned water pumps in an aquaponic system. We also have air pumps because the fish need to breathe. The plants also need to breathe. Their roots need oxygen. And turning all of that ammonia into nitrate takes a lot of oxygen. You swap out the hydrogens for oxygen. You've got to give them air. So I would say possibly, but I would be worried about the fish being able to breathe in a mason jar.
Yeah,
and you'd have to have a pretty big mason jar, depending on what kind of fish you had.
On that note, Johanna, it's a pleasure talking with you. I appreciate it very much. We learned a lot about aquaponics, and we'll have you back and do this again. Thank you so much.
Thanks for inviting me, Larry. Great to see you.
Great to see you. Johanna Oosterwyk, instructional manager of the D.C. Smith Greenhouse on the UW-Madison Department of Plant and Agrosystem Sciences, our guest today. Yeah, fun having her and fun learning a bit about aquaponics and whether or not you can do it or want to do it. We're going to stay in the water a bit, but we're going to take a look at canoeing and kayaking on it instead of maybe growing plants on it. That coming up next. I'm Larry Mueller for WPR News.